Welcome, brethren. This is the Mason's Lead Better Master Builder Call. I'm Mike Clevenger, and I'm going to be moderating tonight's session. And, of course, as advertised, we have a very special guest this evening, and I'll introduce him in just a minute. If this is your first time on one of our Master Builder Calls or first time listening to it on our website, we welcome you, and let me tell you briefly about our purpose here. Just a little history. The Mason's Lead Better program began October of 2014, and during that first Masonic year into 2015, we held 25 workshops throughout in each district in Ohio, and these workshops were for the purpose of presenting a program of personal and leadership development and encourage the process so that the tools and lessons of Masonry become more fully understood and become practically used in our everyday life. And so this program has continued into this Masonic year. We have now two different workshops, one entitled Becoming Masonry and the other, the Masonic Leaders Trestle Board. And both of these programs are designed on our website, or described on our website, masonsleadbetter.com. And if you haven't attended one of those, we have four remaining, and I'll encourage you to go to the website and if you can, attend one of those. Very quickly, we've got one coming up August 13th in Springfield, which is the Masonic Leaders Trestle Board Workshop. Another Masonic Leaders Trestle Board workshop in Middletown on August 20th. And the last Becoming Masonry we're going to do this Masonic year is in Westlake, Ohio on Saturday, August 27th. And we'll wrap up the workshops this year on September 10th in Twinsburg, Northeast Ohio at Summit Masonic Temple. So get a chance. You're listening. Go sign up. We'd love to have you at one of our workshops. These monthly calls then were started to encourage and support the concepts presented during these workshops and also to present interesting subjects about personal development, leadership, and certainly about Masonry. So if you're listening tonight or on here live, we'll take about an hour, or sometimes it's less than an hour, depending upon what happens during the evening, and we're recording the call. And then we'll post that on the website for those who couldn't make the call, or if you want to listen again, that's great. You can download it, use it as a lodge program. If parts of it work, it's there for your use. And we're going to spend time, first of all, with our guest, and then those on the call will have an opportunity to ask questions or make comments. Right now, we don't have a huge, huge crowd on the call, so I've left all of the callers unmuted. And so I just encourage you right now during our presentation and discussion about this book this evening, got a question, just holler it out. We'll figure it out when it happens. If not, we'll go to a question and answer period, and you can hit *6 on your phone and get in the queue to ask a question. But I'll let you know if we're going to do that in that manner. So with that little introduction there about our programming, let me introduce our special guest tonight. Our guest tonight is Brother Jason Eddy, who is a past master of High Point Lodge 773 in Monroe, Ohio. He is a 32nd degree Mason and a member of the Valley of Dayton. And he is a regular contributor to the Living Stones magazine. And you can find him on the website, thelaudablepursuit.com. And he's published in numerous state and national publications. He is here to bring us further light from his newest book, and that book is entitled Casting Light, A Journey Through Craft Masonry and Beyond. And if you got the email, I put a link in there. You can go to Amazon and buy that book and start studying it. And I would encourage you to do that. Anyway, without further ado, Brother Eddie, thank you very much for being here. How's things going this evening with you?
Things are going great. I really appreciate you having me on. Give me a chance to talk a little bit about the book.
Okay.
Hopefully get challenged a little bit, maybe answer some questions and learn a little bit with everybody.
Yeah, we always have some what I like to call, I don't like to call them discussions, I like to call them dialogue. So we'll certainly have that this evening. Well, first of all, I always like to ask our guests to tell a little bit about themselves, your family, your lodge, and finally tell us just exactly how you got involved in the fraternity and how you became a Mason. So why don't you do that right now for us?
Okay. So like you mentioned kind of in the intro, I live here near Monroe, Ohio, so I'm about 20 miles north of Cincinnati. Married with four beautiful kids. My day job, so when I'm not studying masonry passionately, which I love to do, I do process engineering work for a consumer product company. I make baby care products, sometimes diapers, sometimes baby wipes. Occasionally I'll jump across and make toothpaste. So completely different from anything, you know, that to may come across in the book. But so that's kind of my job, very much involved with my family. Family is very important to me. How I ended up in the craft, I read the Dan Brown book, The Lost Symbol, and it kind of hit me at a time. I had had a few friends over the years through work that were Freemasons that, you know, they would mention every once in a while, and I'd give them a hard time about, you know, being in a cult or a secret society. Not knowing better. So, you know, as it happened, you know, I ended up reading The Lost Symbol, and I found it to, you know, to me it was a 400 or so page brochure on how amazing masonry can be, you know, and it just so happened at the time there were a lot of things going on. So I came into the craft in late 2009, and so there were a lot of things going on in society, politics-wise and things like that, that there's a lot of divisiveness and things like that. And one of the things that really attracted me to Freemasonry was kind of the universality and the idea that, you know, as we say, you know, men of every country, sect, and opinion, you know, can come together in harmony. And so, you know, between that and, you know, I've always had a love for deeper meanings and understanding symbols and things like that, you know, and obviously not everything in the book was true, you know, but long story short, right. I was raised to the Sublime Degree in February 2010. And I haven't looked back. It's been a great journey.
Okay. So from that, how long after you became a Freemason did you start thinking about, hey, there's got to be more to this than what I'm seeing in Lodge?
It was about 6 weeks.
Six weeks, okay.
Yeah.
Didn't take too long.
No, it didn't. And so, you know, probably not fairly uncommon. They rifled me through the degrees pretty quickly.
Okay.
You know, I was initiated as an apprentice, you know, studied, you know, I had a great mentor, you know, great man. And, you know, he worked with me every single day. And, you know, 2 weeks later, I returned my proficiency and was passed the Fellowcraft. 2 weeks later, I returned and became Master Mason. And I can remember after, you know, being raised, you know, we went downstairs for refreshment, and, you know, I looked, you know, with kind of this little gleam in my eye, you know, like a kid, and looked at one of the past masters and said, well, I'm ready for the secrets, you know, what's it all about? And he's like, well, that was it. And I'm like, well, there's got to be more to it than that. And he's like, no, he said, you know, the ritual is just kind of something we do, you know, the handshake, or the, you know, the token and the grip and the word, those are the only secrets that we really have in masonry. The rest is just kind of tradition. And I remember leaving that night just completely deflated, you know, just really let down. you know, for lack of a better phrase. So, you know, I kept going to Lodge, and I stumbled across a few websites. I think I mentioned them in the book, actually, but stumbled across the blog about traditional observance masonry. And,
right.
you know, it just kind of, you know, sparked a flame. You know, I was super excited that, you know, it wasn't just something that was in my head. That, you know, maybe it wasn't my lodge, but there were lodges that had that type of atmosphere. And, yeah, so, I mean, I could talk for a while, and, you know, I'm happy to keep talking about it. So that was kind of the moment when I realized that, you know, hey, you know, I'm not really, this isn't what I thought masonry was.
Okay, so you meaning what you were observing in Lodge wasn't what you thought it would be at all, right?
Right, correct.
Okay, well, this kind of leads me into this question that and your comments about what you saw in Lodge was what you thought it would be about. Why don't you explain to us about how you set this whole book up, the three types of masons that you describe in the book. There are three types of men who seek out masonry, because obviously you saw one of several of those types in your own lodge.
Right. Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, just in a total transparency, you know, when I originally started out writing the book, I had in my mind the idea of applying the number three to everything, right? And obviously three is a big number in our ritual and a lot of our symbols. And, you know, so, you know, a fair argument could be made or dialogue could be had on how many groups there actually are. You know, I boiled it down to three to kind of go in line with the theme of what at the time the book was going to follow. But it very much lines up with what I've experienced, you know, in my time in masonry. You know, there are the three different types of men that come to the craft, and they come for very different reasons. And, you know, by and large, you know, within each group, the men are actually getting what they came for. You know, whether it's, you know, they're simply here for the fraternal aspect. You know, usually you'll see those guys that, you know, are pretty close with a few brethren from the lodge, and they get together a lot outside of lodge, or they play golf, or, you know, they fish or hunt or do something together outside of lodge, you know, but usually they're somewhat separate from the rest of the group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you have the other guys, you know, kind of the, you know, I think, you know, they're very much kind of the workhorse or you know, the cogs in the machine in masonry, right? They're the guys that really just get in there and, you know, they fly through the officer's chairs, and then they go into the, you know, district officers association, and next thing you know, they're deputies, and they're very, very involved, and that's what drives them is that involvement and, you know, kind of maintaining the machine in masonry. You know, and they're not always necessarily looking for anything deeper other than, you know, upholding, you know, the body of masonry, you know, and they
sort of like the managers of masonry, huh?
Right, right. You know, and you know, and I think I mentioned in the book, you know, if it weren't for that group, you know, I would not be here. You know, I really believe that, you know, those are the guys that have kept things going for the last, you know, several decades, you know, since the big boom and kind of the downfall. And so, yeah, so, you know, and then I believe there's a small group, and I kind of broke it down to about 10% of guys that are really looking for something deep and, you know, spiritual, and, you know, they're asking, you know, really powerful questions, and they're kind of hoping to find, if not the answers in masonry, they're looking for men who are asking the same question, right, that they can have those types of discussions with and look for those answers with.
Okay. So I think you're saying the book, I mean, I think I hear you saying tonight that all three of those groups are necessary, right?
Well, I wouldn't say they're necessary.
Okay.
I think they have value, right? Because I do have, you know, and I think this comes across in the book, I do believe that, you know, there's room, there's almost room for anything in masonry, right? You know, not to sidetrack myself too much, but, you know, a lot of times lodges will say, well, Grand Lodge won't let us do this or we can't do that. The code really allows for, you know, a near infinite number of variations of what the lodge experience can look like, you know. So I don't necessarily think all three groups are necessary. I think they fit. I think they serve a purpose as they are. But I think, you know, one or all three of those groups could completely change and masonry, you know, still function.
Yeah, one of the things I underlined in that area when you talk about those three groups was this sentence. You talked about those three groups and their functions, and then you made this statement. However, what the majority of Masons are missing is the desire to truly understand the craft and its meaning.
Right.
And yeah. So my question is, and you know, you mentioned it before, there's this traditional observance. I don't want to call it a revolution, but it's something that has popped its head up and more Masons are paying attention. So there is some movement to that, but how do we, I guess maybe it's too deep a question here to begin with, but how do we create that desire for a man to understand a little more about Masonry other than, you know, golf outings, bean suppers, and degree work?
Right. Well, so, you know, as far as Theo Masonry, you know, traditional observance Masonry, I don't necessarily believe that that's the end-all, be-all of Masonry.
Okay.
That's the experience that I look for, and that's what I would like to see out of Masonry.
Okay.
But I would never take the stance of saying that that is what Masonry should be to everyone.
Okay.
You know, when I make the statement of, you know, what's missing is the desire to understand Masonry, I think what we see too often, and it goes back to the statement, you know, that I mentioned I got from the past master. You know, I was raised, and I said, you know, what's it all about? And he said, well, that was it. We just do it because that's what we have to do to get to the Master Mason. You know, there's nothing more to it. And so I think what's missing is if anything, just a desire to say, okay, well, why do we do the things we do? You know, at a minimum, I think that there should be a focus on understanding, you know, the ritual, if not from what it means symbolically, you know, to a historical or traditional perspective, right? You know, we do it for some reason. We're not just, you know, a group of guys with cool words and handshakes that like to get together, you know,
yeah,
a couple times a month. There's a reason behind it. And so I think what you find is probably the majority of guys have either never asked that question of, you know, why do we do that? Or, you know, if the question is asked, they say, well, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's just kind of something we do. So I really just feel like there needs to be an education there. Now, that doesn't mean that the lodge can't be focused on things like, you know, bean cookouts and, you know, fish fries and things like that. I've never been against anything like that. But I feel like there needs to be some type of foundational purpose to Masonry. You know,
okay.
Any group can get together and be fraternal and have fish fries. You know, there's
a
reason we have ritual in history.
Mm-hmm. And I, before we started the show, we, you know, I was describing that the Masons Lead Better program was based on the premise that, hey, these are more than words in this blue ritual book we use here in Ohio. They have a meaning, and that meaning can help you become a better man. And so that whole thing about we take good men and make them better comes alive when you start understanding what the meaning of those words are.
Absolutely.
And that's what I know you're saying in this book is, and that came from, as you said, a personal desire for more answers than, well, that's all there is. That's all you get.
Right.
So tell us, you know, what would the what would the average Mason, what could he take away from your book? I mean, if What kinds of lessons were you trying to impart in here?
Okay. I mean, I think there's you know, I could probably think of four. You know, one, and you know, possibly you know, one of the bigger ones is it gives you know, people reading the book a chance to learn from my mistakes. You know, I talk in the book a little bit about when I had that initial disappointment. You know, and then I went off and I discovered, you know, Keogh Masonry. I went back to my lodge and I spent several months explaining to the guys in lodge, you know, what they were doing wrong and this isn't what Masonry is supposed to be like and, you know, you guys are missing the point. And, you know, fortunately, I had a brother pull me aside and say, you know, look, you know, your Masonry isn't everybody's Masonry. You know, you need to be respectful of these guys that have been doing it this way for 50 years. It may not be what you want them to do, but that's what they want to do. And so, you know, I quickly learned, you know, the importance of humility, you know, and I changed my approach from one of saying this is what you're doing wrong to one of, hey, look how great it would be if you did it this way. Not if you did it right, but look if you did it this way. You know, I'm not saying mine's right, yours is wrong. Look how interesting this is if we do ritual by candlelight. Or if we, you know, have education at every meeting versus, you know, every other month, you know. And so I think there's a lot, you know, and I'm sure even not having been through Masons League better that you know more about it than I do in terms of driving a group towards a goal or helping people understand something. It's very much in how you present it. And so I learned quickly that I was presenting it all wrong, you know. And so before, you know, the brethren in my lodge even had a chance to see what my version of Masonry looked like, they were already turned off from it, you know, because I was just coming at it the wrong way. Mm-hmm. You know, another thing, I feel like it kind of paints an accurate picture, or somewhat accurate picture of the demographics. You know, I've got the 45-45-10 split, you know, the three groups.
Right.
You know, I think there's a lot of what, you know, why I like to call them passive light seekers. You know, they're the guys that kind of sit quietly and lodge, and they really want more. But they really don't have any idea that there's another guy sitting across the lodge just looking for the same thing. So it never gets brought up. And so I think it gives guys a chance to say, hey, there are other guys looking for the same type of thing. I think it's a decent primer in kind of the esoteric side of Masonry. You know, it takes a lot of the symbols, you know, that were given through the three degrees, you know, even the working tools themselves and gives them a deeper meaning, you know, so it kind of looks behind the veil a little bit. It's obviously not an extremely deep esoteric type book, but I feel like it's just deep enough to kind of give, you know, what I'll call the mainstream Mason, you know, kind of a taste of, you know, the types of things you see if you look just a little bit beyond, you know, just kind of the monitorial explanation that were given in the lectures and charges. And then probably the last thing would just, I hope that, you know, it encourages open-mindedness. You know,
encourages what, Jason? I didn't catch that.
Open-mindedness. You know,
open-mindedness. Okay.
Yeah, I was very, very, you know, intentional in writing the book to not take any type of authoritative stance. You know, I learn more in trying to explain my application symbols to other people than I do, you know, on my own. You know, it's, you know, one of my favorite, you know, verses, you know, from the volume Sacred Law is, you know, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And so being open-minded about what the symbols mean, we learn so much more. So the book isn't intended to say this is what the 24-inch gauge is supposed to mean. It's about saying this is one of the meanings you can apply, and if that speaks to you, if that helps you improve yourself as a better, you know, to become a better man, wonderful. If not, maybe there's a different meaning that you can find that you can apply in your everyday life. And so, you know, it's really just hopefully encouraging people to not be fundamentalist, you know, but to look at things kind of with a open mind and open perspective.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you said that, what you did, because I found that experience as well when I began the Masons Lead Better program, and I remember my very first workshop, going there knowing that I'm going to ask a group of men who most of them probably were in those first two types of Masons, that, you know, it's a family tradition to be in Masonry, or I'm here for the fellowship and the fraternity part of it, mm-hmm. and never really thought about deeper meaning. And my workshop was built around asking them what these things meant to them, and I'm scared to death, you know?
Right. Right.
And I'm going, you know, and I look at the first room, and I got guys in there from early 20s and guys up into their 70s and 80s. And you know what I found? And I think it is, I found that the older Masons, when you present that kind of question in a manner that you described earlier, about you don't force it on them, you just say, hey, this is what it means to me, what does that mean to you? And I found that when I asked that question, I got some wonderful answers out of older Masons who had been around forever, and they started talking about, well, you know, what that 24-inch gauge, how they applied it to their life or the compasses or whatever. So your point is very valid about that. About the way you approach, you know, some of the subjects you put in your book.
Yep.
And a lodge can be, I think I hear you saying this, that the lodge can be a lot of things to a lot of people.
Absolutely, yeah.
But we can't take those 10% that really are looking for great deeper meaning and create and totally change our existing lodges to that.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, 100%, you know, each lodge can be an individual and have, you know, I think the word you used was have its own meaning. I think the main thing, and this kind of goes back to, you know, before the call started, you and I were talking about Dan Horinko's book, you know, Purpose Driven Lodge. It just needs to have a meaning, right? And so,
right.
You know, one of the discussions we had, you know, the year that I was in the East was I really tried hard to get our lodge to, you know, kind of a mission statement. You know, when someone comes off the street and says, hey, you're Freemasonry, or you're Freemason, what do you guys do? And, you know, the canned answer is we make good men better. And I said, okay, guys, well, what if the follow-up to that is, okay, well, the lodge up the street said the same thing. What do you guys do different?
Mm-hmm.
You need to have an answer, right?
And right.
I think most lodges, our lodge included, didn't have an answer to that. And so I think it's about finding, you know, and this speaks more to Dan's book than my own, but it comes down to finding, you know, why are you there in the first place? And is that particular lodge meeting your needs? You know, and if you're not getting what you need there, I'm sure there's a lodge out there that either is already giving you that or is trying to get to that.
Yeah, and I understand exactly what you're talking about, because I found over my years working with the fraternity and leadership development that a great number of lodges or named councils, chapters, commanderies, you name it, have no unified purpose that they could, every member can stand up and say, we are here to do this, and we believe that by doing this, we will get there.
Right.
They had no unified vision, and that's why you mentioned Dan's book. I mean, that's the importance of Dan's book, that a group of guys can get together, define a purpose, head in the same direction. So, you know, I applaud you for doing that. The second workshop we're doing this year, the Masonic Leaders Trestle Board, talks about how you what is that process? How do you take that idea that you have, or how do you create that unified vision? How do you go about that?
Right.
And so I'm very much aware that that's a needed thing. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else that was really important to you to get into this book that comes to mind?
A lot. You know, it's hard to kind of break it down to talking points. But what I was trying to do is, is really just paint what I felt like was, you know, a balanced perspective of the craft, you know, and talk about all 3 degrees and talk about how they're all important, you know. Usually the only degree you hear, you know, mentioned when you're talking to a brother about his experience coming through is being raised. And, you know, in my own personal Masonic journey, I found, you know, more light in the Entered Apprentice degree than any of the other 2 degrees. And so what I try to do with the book is really kind of shine some light on, you know, all 3 degrees to show that, hey, there's a lot throughout the whole journey. And if you look at all 3 of them at the same time, you'll see that they're very much cooperative, right? You know, there's a flow to them, and there's a reason. It's not just stepping stones. You know, the EA ties directly into something, you know, in the Master Mason, and if the fellow craft wasn't there, it doesn't work. And, you know, just trying to show the kind of the importance of all 3 and why we shouldn't forget necessarily the first 2. And, you know, probably the other thing is just to kind of, you know, show different ways of looking at things. You know, I was really excited about including the poems in the book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I feel like poetry is kind of a, I don't know if I would call it necessarily lost art. There's plenty of poets out there, but I think it's one of those things that is often overlooked, you know, and Masonic poetry has a very long and rich history. There's, you know, so much beautiful Masonic poetry. And it's another way, you know, I feel like that we can boil down concepts, you know, into very concise and almost visual meaning, you know, with the poetry. And we can share an experience through poetry. And so, you know, it's important to me to include the poetry in there as well.
Yeah, yeah. And as I said, I used one the other night. So how did you get I know you have another book that preceded this book that is a poetry book, correct?
Yes, yes.
I've not read that. Is that a Masonic related kind of poetry, or is this just general poetry?
It's a mixture. There are so actually a few of the poems, not many, but there's a few of the poems in this book that I put in my book that I published last year that was just poetry, but it's mostly just, I guess you would just call it general poetry.
I'm not a poet, so I don't know what you call it, what that is, general poetry.
Yeah.
How did you start writing poetry, by the way?
You know what? I've been writing poetry since I was a kid. You know, my mom always wrote poetry, and you know, when I was in, you know, junior high and high school, so like church and youth group and stuff, I would write, you know, poems for the group, and we'd sing them at the campfire, you know, so I guess I would write songs. But, you know, and then it kind of went away, and then it, you know, maybe 5-6 years ago, I just, you know, when I came into Masonry, I just kind of got the desire to start writing and trying to process my thoughts a little bit, and it just ended up being poems.
And poems come out, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've read several of them. I just want to tell you, I enjoy them. And I'm going to see how many more I can use as I do presentations. So I always give you credit, by the way.
You're welcome to use as many as you want. You know, I'm not big on the credit thing, but you know, it's surely welcome. So.
Okay. Well, I see my good friend, right worshipful brother Bill Estelle on the call. Bill, you got any thoughts at this point? Or are you just listening?
And just listening to what's been said and listening to the Deputy Grand Master's rollout program last Saturday, and one of the things he was talking about is getting back to the basics of what Masonry is about. And what I think I'm hearing in this conversation here is the importance of education, Masonic education, and going back to those basic tenets of what Masonry is all about and informing young guys, because you're right. I think we gloss over that stuff in our lodges. Sometimes our lodges do butchery to the degree work. And, you know, as you said the other night, Mike, out at Southgate Potter Lodge, the lessons to be learned in our ritual are so rich and so important. And as the Deputy Grand Master was saying Saturday, it's important that we deliver those things correctly and get a young man interested in what's being said in the ritual, and then you really need to dive into the education of what that ritual is all about and all the pieces and parts and how they fit together and the lessons to be learned there. It's just a wealth of knowledge that ties everything together when you really get into it. It brings a whole lot of things together. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's just kind of some of the things I was listening to as I was, or thinking about as I was listening to the conversation.
Yeah, and I mean, that brings to mind, if I agree with you, yeah, that's important, and certainly Jason, through his book, he believes it's important too.
Sure.
But we, I don't know, I'll ask both of you, Jay, where do we start? I mean, I think I heard you say, Jason, you kind of start small. Is that how you started in your lodge?
Yeah.
Little pieces that enlightened?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for me, you know, I think what was important was, yeah, to start small. So it was about, you know, showing the brethren in the lodge, hey, if we try this, look what it does. You know, just a simple change like candles, you know,
yeah.
Or bringing music back into the degree work, you know, and they slowly saw it. And some of the things they didn't like, and that was okay. And that kind of goes back to the approach. For me, the big thing was, you know, and I know I talk about it in the book, is humility. You know, it's really approaching it with the attitude of, I'm not going to tell you what's right. I'm going to, you know, we're all on the level. We're all here for hopefully some mm-hmm. important reason. Let's figure out how those reasons line up and what we can do to help each other get to that point. And so it's really about, you know, and, you know, I'm plugging Dan's book again, but Dan Horanko's book, it's really about helping collectively get to a purpose and understanding, you know, maybe it's a compromise. Maybe everybody doesn't agree on exactly what that purpose needs to be, and there's give and take, you know. But, yeah, it's really just about starting small and, you know, one step at a time, and it will snowball, you know. You know, once they see the changes happening and really like the direction it's going, I think you'll see rather than kind of open up and be a little less, you know, averse to trying new things.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Mike. Are you
no,
the,
go ahead, Bill.
Education
ahead, Bill.
Officer at your lodge?
No, I took this year off, actually. We had a baby. So, but, yeah, the last 3 years I've been in the lodge.
The last 3 years. Yeah. How were your programs received by the guys in the lodge?
They were actually received quite well. We had a couple of the older past masters that, you know, had pulled me aside, and it was very flattering. Said, you know, they're going to make sure that if they have to pick one night of lodge to come, it's going to be when I'm giving a program. You know, because it was not necessarily because of my delivery, but it was looking at things differently than they had looked at it before, and they were intrigued
yeah.
by it. And so it was really just kind of just, if sometimes, if anything, whether I think they're just looking for something new. You know, so many lodges exist just to continue their existence, you know, and the guys stopped coming because there's just no reason to come. And I think when they started to see that, hey, if anything, I'm going to learn a little bit about alchemy this week, right, or I'll learn a little bit about the history of Ohio ritual, you know, it gave them something to come for.
Yeah, cool.
What do you think about lodges that are, you know, Bloom's taxonomy, if you have, it's on levels, and you have food, shelter, and clothing at the bottom. And then once those three things are taken care of, you can progress to the next higher level, and which would include other things. And I think in our lodges, you know, a lot of the issues you hear in lodges are how do we maintain what we have. They're financially running into trouble. And in order to get, I think, a lodge thinking the way you're thinking and getting back to the basics and paying more attention to what it is we ought to be doing, we've somehow got to break out of this thing where we've got lodges in, that are financially in trouble. What do you think? I mean, you're a young guy. You've been into it for a little bit. Have you experienced any of that? Have you seen any of that in your district?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, my stance has always been, and it's rarely a popular one, is that, you know, we need to focus less on, you know, kind of the outward appearance of things and the big grandiose buildings and, you know, ornate columns and everything that we have in some of our older buildings, and focus on the fact that a lodge can exist in the absence of a building. You know, a lodge is really about a collection of masons that get together to do work. And I think it's really, you know, once I think it's an iterative process. You know, I think once we get to the point where the lodges really have a purpose and the men are getting fulfilled, and then those men start attracting other men who seek the same thing that they're seeking. And then, you know, that will begin to build your numbers and your active members and your dues, and everything will start actually covering the cost for whatever it is. I think as a whole, you know, Masonic lodges live, you know, far beyond their means. You know, the days when we could afford the buildings that we have, I think they're gone.
How's that received when you start talking to members about, well, the lodge is more than just a building?
usually not great.
Yeah. Well, I ask these questions because as coming off a third year of being a district deputy,
mm-hmm.
and looking at the books, I mean, there are lodges. What district are you in, by the way?
I'm in the 2nd District.
We have lodges here in the 14th District that need to merge, they need to sell out, they need to go in with us. We have 26 lodges in our district. We don't need them.
Right.
And when you approach them about that subject, that you've got this pile of bricks and mortar here that's eating you out of house and home, and when that's happening, that's all you seem to be worried about in your lodge meeting. How are we going to get to the next meeting? And how are we going to live from paycheck to paycheck? And I guess my point is when you're worrying about that kind of thing in a lodge, you're not looking beyond that next tier into the education and the other things, because you're still back on tier number one. Dealing with the shelter, the food, clothing, and shelter thing.
I agree, yeah.
And, I have not been able to come up with some way to convince people that, you know, our fraternity is more, you know, it's a fraternity. It's not a building with a name and a number on it. And
right.
It seems like we've gotten to that point.
Well, and I think...
I don't know the answer.
Yeah, and I think a fair argument to be made that, you know, there's been so little substance behind so much of our masonry for so long that the reason, you know, the brethren have so much pride in their lodge building is because that's all they know of masonry, right? That lodge building represents masonry to them. And so it's heartbreaking for them to think about that lodge going away because, you know, they haven't had, you know, 20, 30 years of meaningful, fulfilling, life-changing experiences in there. They've just had kind of an emotional attachment to the lodge building itself. And so it's hard to let that go.
Yeah, it's a place they can drive by and say, hey, there's my lodge building.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well,
and if you got a charter and 8 guys in Ohio and get a dispensation, you can meet in my living room if you want.
Right.
Bill, you're right. It's if we want to get back, I don't know, what is this, a chicken egg thing? Do we take all the buildings?
I don't know.
Do we take all the buildings away and say, okay, we're going to study masonry for about 10 years, and then think about getting you a building.
Well, I just think that we've hit a point where we've got lodges that are financially in trouble, and as long as they're in those conditions and they're trying to get that financial end straightened out, they're not going to be concerned with the other part, and we need to get past that somehow. And I really and truly think that if some lodges got past it and, say, found a place that they rented, rent off another building that's more successful, that's more financially intact, I think they would find that, hey, we can be Masons, and we don't have to worry about insurance. We don't have to worry about utility bills and all this other stuff. We can start thinking about the stuff that's real, and maybe that's an approach that needs to be taken to try to convince some of those people that are in trouble. And Mike, I'm sure you probably know in the 14th District what lodges I'm talking about.
Sure.
And it's, you know, I've tried to talk to people that way, and I said, you know, you're stuck here worrying about this when really you need to be on a higher plane teaching people what masonry is about. But as long as you got this dinosaur around your neck, you're never going to get there.
Sure.
And I think it's a step off. It's like, you know, the Indiana Jones movie where he takes a step off the ledge. And I think
leap of faith.
Yeah, he might be right. And in fact, that's what some of these guys, that's all they've ever known, is that lodge building. And I think you're right, Jason. I think when they say that, they might just be a little bit afraid of what's around the corner if we did something different.
Right, and you know, even, you know, just talking, you know, just numbers, you know, the dues that we pay are so extraordinarily low. You know, I think you would be hard pressed to find a Mason in Ohio that pays more for his dues and lodge than he spends on coffee.
Yeah.
You know, I think the average,
right.
You know, and I'm sure there's statistics that maybe Grand Lodge has. I haven't seen them. Just talking with Brother, and I'd say probably the average dues in Ohio are 65 to 70. You know,
probably pretty close.
Yeah, and so, you know, we're really talking about, you know, $5-6 a month, you know, and if you double those overnight, you know, how many lodges just doubling that would that save? And then you're talking about spending $12 a month, but usually there's just a, you know, a major uprising if you talk about raising dues. And, you know, I think an argument is there that, you know, you have to give them something worth their money.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And that, so it is kind of a chicken and egg thing. You know, if you give them a lodge experience worth having, they're not going to get upset, you know, spending $20 a month on lodge.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
I know. You look at some of the Prince Hall lodges, and their dues and their due structures are very high. I mean, $400-$500 a year.
Right.
But they, I think they really practice masonry there, though, too.
Yeah, I've had quite a few experiences with Prince Hall Brethren, and yeah, they're extremely active. You know, they have very few members that don't come to lodge. You know, and the ones that are there, you know, they're a part of every activity that lodge does. And so it's a very holistic experience for those guys.
One thought that was that I gleaned off of one of the Grand Lodge officers, if your due structure is high, then maybe somebody will show up to lodge to get their money's worth.
Why? Sure.
You know, and I think people are that way. If you have to pay out, well, I'm going to get my money's worth out of this thing.
Right.
Well, and there's the old thing, too, about, you know, if it's real cheap, that's what I'm getting. But if it's expensive, wait a minute, there's got to be something really, really good.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
That's great.
Well,
point,
you
right?
Get what you pay for.
Yeah.
If we say, you know, we need to raise dues, and that's what it takes to keep these buildings that we want to keep alive, you know, we've got to give them their money's worth, you know, because arguably right now they're getting their money's worth. I think that argument's been made.
Jason, let me get back to the book a little bit in that, have you found others in, say, your lodge or your district that are part of that 10% you describe, and are you trying to get together and do anything about it?
I've linked up with a handful here in the district, and we meet. You know, we're not at any point to where we have, you know, the numbers or the consistent engagement to think about chartering or anything like that. But I've met several, you know, in my district.
Okay.
And even say like.
Okay. A couple of things. Number one, I forgot to ask you right at the get-go, is the cover of your book is by Tessa Eddy. Is that one of your daughters, or is that your wife?
No, that's my daughter. That's my 9.
How old is she?
She's 9. She was super excited to do that. So
this is really cool. It's really cool. And so I meant to ask that at the beginning. And the other thing is, are there any other books in you that are in process or in your head?
Not at the moment. You know, I kind of started this when I started writing this. It was more a collection of my own thoughts. You know, and then I started seeing it kind of take some framework, and I thought, wow, it'd be kind of cool to actually, you know, share these. And, you know, so I didn't start out trying to write a book. You know, would I like to write something else in the future? Yeah, absolutely. But, no, I'm not really thinking of anything at the moment.
Oh, okay. And I assume you use, since you've got it on Amazon, you use their self-publishing platform there?
Yeah, I use this called CreateSpace. So, yeah, I publish it through that.
How'd that work for you? Pretty good?
Yeah, it worked really well. Yeah, I'd already done it with the poetry book, so I was pretty familiar with the process. And this one was a little bit, actually, I want to say a little bit. This was a ton more work than that book because, you know, you don't really need to edit poetry, you know, but you definitely need to edit something like this. So, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a Masonic brother whose wife is a copy editor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so she did all my editing for me, and she held me to pretty high standards, I felt like. So,
yeah,
it was a lot of work, but I'm happy with it.
Yeah, good. Well, I thought I recognized. I know other authors who use that that platform. And, matter of fact, I think Mike Kirkab, I mentioned earlier, used that platform as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, we're getting close to the top of the hour here. Jason, anything else that parting words that you'd like to bring out about the book? Tell us, tell everyone where we can get this now.
Yeah, so the book, like you said, the book is available on Amazon. It's available in paperback or in Kindle version. So you can get it pretty instant. Amazon, you know, once I publish it, I set the list price. But Amazon, you know, seems to keep dropping it. So initial list price was $11.99. I think last time I checked the other day, it was down to like $9.99 or something like that.
Wow.
So, and, you know, so they control the price. But so it's somewhere between $9 and $11.99 on Amazon or $7.99 Kindle. And, you know, no, I mean, the only part of words is just that, you know, I really appreciate that for me to talk a little bit about it. And
oh, you're welcome.
Yeah.
And I'll tell those listening too, you know, you go directly to Amazon or they're on masonsleadbetter.com under resources. There's a Masonic book there, Masonic book page there, and you'll find Jason's book there as well. And along with, he mentioned Dan Horinko's book, that's there, and several other Masonic authors. So that's always a resource for you. Jason, thank you so very, very much for being here and bringing your book to us. And I encourage those listening to the call to take a look at that book and begin, as I have, studying what's in there and questioning your thoughts about what Jason talks about in here. So next couple of things before we get out of here, and I meant to look at the date, but I'll pull that up right now. We will have another Master Builder call the third, this time it happens to be the fourth Tuesday of August on the 23rd. I have some thoughts about another another Masonic author that I may bring here to our call. And so I hope you will tune in. Again, that's August 23rd. I think Bill mentioned it, but remember that the district, the Deputy Grand Master is in the midst, has just begun his rollout program. So check the homepage of the Grand Lodge of Ohio website so you can see when he will be close to you in Ohio, and go out and listen to what he has in store for us as they continue our Masonic programming here. That's about it, Jason. Thank you very much. Bill, I appreciate you being on the call as well. And
thank you for the invitation.
Oh, you're very welcome. I will, with that, it's just almost 8 o'clock. We'll sign off for the Masons Lead Better Master Builder call for July. Look forward to having you on the call next month. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Good night.